So we're going to get started as people are still filing in. I think there's some more room, but you're probably going to make a friend if you want to find a chair. That's okay. But how's everybody doing? You guys enjoying the conference?
Yeah.
Did everybody drive a... I was told it's not a race car. Did everybody drive a fast car yesterday? I missed it, but... well, this is one of my favorite conferences. This is my second time speaking at it. It's my third time attending. And I look forward to it every year, and I'm honored that you guys would spend this hour with me talking about search. And we're going to be talking about search from the end user, or the power user perspective, that is. And so if you've been paying attention at all to SharePoint 2013 and the release, and particularly the things around search, you've probably heard a lot of amazing things. A lot of advances and investments in search on the back end and the ways that we can crawl things around search relevancy and algorithms. Am I cutting in and out, or am I good? Good? Good or great? I want to be great. So, and in different ways that we can back up and restore search more easily on the infrastructure and architecture side. And you can hear all about that in other sessions. What we're going to talk about here is the stuff for power users. And out of all the advances in SharePoint, in search in SharePoint, what I'm most excited about is the fact that things that I used to do that required a developer resource or a search expert can now be done by a power user. And that's what we're going to look at today. So if we flip to the agenda, just so you get an idea, I'll tell you a tiny bit about myself. I'm just going to run through a quick demo to show you what the interface looks like from an end user's perspective and how some of the features impact that. I'm going to talk about what I call the search experience backbone, which are the kind of core features that a power user would use to create powerful solutions. I'm going to talk about the six things that I recommend that you do when you go back to your offices to create to get the most out of the system. And then I'll talk about some pro tips and tricks and things I've learned over the years working with search. And if we have time, we'll do Q&A as well, and you can see how I kind of broke it up. So very briefly about myself, my name's Paul Olenek. I'm a SharePoint consultant for AvPoint, and I've been dedicated to SharePoint for about 7 years. But in the last few of those years, I got very, very focused and very interested on enterprise search. And specifically, I ended up working with something called Fast Search for SharePoint a lot. So I did a lot of large-scale deployments with big customers, helping them implement search both from a technical standpoint but also from a strategic standpoint. But that's enough about me. I'm more curious about you guys. So I have a sense, who in here would call yourself a power user? Is that 50% maybe? So what are the rest of you, developers? You guys gotta go, sorry. Okay, good. So who in here is already familiar with the 2013 search interface? So a little less than half of you. Okay, so we'll go through it briefly, but we'll get everybody up to speed. Who's never seen it? Anybody? A small handful, okay, good. That helps me to just know where to focus on some of the demo stuff. So before I get into a demo, I just want to talk about the origins of SharePoint 2013 search just for a second. As I mentioned, I was really deep into fast search for SharePoint. So when SharePoint 2013 came out, people would come up to me and say, Paul, did you hear fast comes with SharePoint now? Which is, I guess, kind of true. But really what it is that the current release includes some technology from Fast ESP, which was a standalone search engine that Microsoft acquired a few years ago. It includes technologies from the first iteration of connecting, or I'd say integrating, Fast into SharePoint, and that was with a product called Fast Search for SharePoint. They kept some things from SharePoint 2010 search that worked very well, and there were some things that worked very well. And there's some new innovations, and that's how we get SharePoint 2013 search. Just two things that I want to kind of point out from a high level, platform level. One is that we have a single search core now, and what I mean by that is there's sort of one set of bits that you install, and then based on which license you're using, you'll get more or less features. But it's just one set of bits, and that's relevant because in the prior version, we had an entry level, which was foundation search, and then you could apply this other thing on top of it called Search Server Express, and then if you moved up, then you could go to standard and enterprise, which was a different SharePoint install, and then we have fast search for SharePoint if you want the kind of elite level, which was a whole other farm that you bolted to it. So now it's not the case, and you can just apply the right license and get the features that you want. The other thing that I think is very interesting is that search is used pervasively within the platform out of the box, right? So a number of core features of SharePoint that seemingly have nothing to do with search are either aided by or driven by search. So things like cross-site publishing, aggregation with the content search web part, faceted navigation, e-discovery, all these things have to do with search. And the reason I bring it up is because if you're not very familiar with search today, as you get more familiar with it, I want you to be thinking search doesn't have to be a search box with 10 blue links that come back. You can use it in pretty amazing ways. And if there was any question whether that's true, just look at what they released or what they announced anyway at the keynote with that Oslo thing, which is driven by search. Really powerful stuff. Doesn't, and you wouldn't expect that it has to do with search. And with that, let's get into just a real quick demo. Make sure I press the right button here. Voila. So in this demo, we'll do some make-believe. In this demo, my name is Paul Olenek, which is a stretch, but I work for Contoso, of course. And Contoso is a global electronics manufacturer. And I'm the new, brand new marketing manager. And I'm going to be working on a marketing campaign coming up. And so I just want to kind of get the lay of the land. What are we doing marketing-wise? Who are the players? What kind of assets are available to me? So I'm just going to perform a search here for the word marketing. And I can see that I get these query suggestions. So I'm thinking maybe somebody else has searched for this before. And then I get just the out-of-the-box experience. And nothing too exciting here yet. We've got the main set of results kind of down the middle. But I want to draw your attention first to the tabs at the top. So we've got these different things. We call them search verticals now, just because Microsoft likes to introduce new names for the same things sometimes. And so I've got these different tabs and experiences if I want to focus my search on a particular aspect. And if you see as I kind of flip through each of these, that the content that's delivered on each of them is optimized for the type of content that's being delivered, rendered, right? So I've got people, and I can see particular attributes about them. I can go to conversations and see what people are talking about within community sites, on their news feeds, and elsewhere. And if I go to videos, there's yet another experience that's clearly optimized for videos. And if I click on this little ellipse, then I can even start watching one of those videos as a preview. So going back to the main tab, the Everything tab, on the left-hand side, we have refiners. And you guys probably recognize those if you've used 2010 search. They were there then. We still have them. They're easier to configure, for sure. And there have been some advancements in them as well, some new capabilities. And so one of those is that we have the concept of a visual refiner. So this guy over here, slider, that's probably something you recognize if you've done a search for like an airline flight, and you can change the dates and that sort of thing. And another one that I want to draw your attention to is the author refiner. So something I can do is if I'm looking for a particular author who's not appearing in this list, perhaps because they would appear beneath these other names, I can perform a search right there. And I get some autocomplete behavior. And so I'm going to click on this Dorena Peshka. And that's refined my main set of results to items that she has authored. And if I flip over these, you can see the metadata that she authored them. But you also probably saw, if you were looking close, that the refiner panel adjusted itself because it reflects the items that are being shown in the main result set. And those got smaller because we're refined just to Dorena right now. The other thing we can do is kind of mix and match these refiners so I can refine on multiple properties. So now I'm showing only those items that Dorena has authored and only those that are PowerPoint files. If I hover over it, I can flip through this document right away in this preview. And this is probably kind of the most exciting thing on the page. And this allows me to figure out, is this the right document I'm looking for? But I don't actually have to spend the time and bandwidth downloading it or opening it in PowerPoint. I can see if this is the right document right from here. And it doesn't appear to be. So I'm going to try a different search. And this time, I'm going to search for Contoso Marketing And I get the suggestion for marketing forecast, so I'm going to go ahead and click on that. And now we see I get a couple of different types of content back this time. I've gotten an Excel file. I can flip through that just the way I did my PowerPoint, the different tabs of the Excel file. But what I'm really looking for, I think, might be this document here. And I can tell just by scrolling through it in the preview that this seems to be interesting. But I want to draw your attention to the bit just below that, this Take a Look Inside feature. And what that's doing is surfacing areas of the document that are relevant to my search. So these are the headings inside of the document. And this one kind of looks like what I'm looking for, this campaign research. And if I click it, the document will open in the browser and take me directly to the paragraph and the section that I'm interested in. So I'm really getting a lot of finding what I'm looking for very quickly and getting this great experience where I get right to the core of what I'm looking at. Haven't opened an Office client yet. Now, the last thing that I'll point out is these actions at the bottom of the hover card. And, you know, finding the right item is perhaps more than half the battle, but we know that the users want to do something with the document when they get it. So they want to download it, they want to edit it, they want to follow it so that they can find it again later, go to the source, to the repository where the document resides. And those are some really broadly applicable actions that Microsoft created, but you could always add your own. Maybe you want to kick off a workflow on this document, something like that. So that's this whole idea of making search results actionable, which is a concept to embrace. So I'm going to follow this document just so I can find it again later. But I'm going to move on to a different search to continue my exploration of marketing materials. So when we had filtered by Dorena, some of the content that came up looked interesting to me. So I'm just going to do a search for her, S-C-H-S-T. And I noticed some things that are interesting, that there seems to be some intelligence. So the system recognized, one, that I was searching for a person and gave me the opportunity to go find that person right away, right? So I can hover over her and learn all about her and her skills or her past projects and interests and so forth. I could even go straight to her profile. But there's also this bit right here, this Documents by Dorena. So this is a results block. And it's really kind of a sub-query, right? I have my main query. It's showing me all the items in general that have the word Dorena in them, or Dorena Peschke in them. But then a sub-query was fired that says, show me just the documents. And they stuck that right at the top. So we're adding a lot of context, right? And there seems to be some intelligence behind it. And we're going to drill into how to create some of those experiences in a couple of moments. So I have another idea for a search here. And that's, I want to hear or learn more about the PR activities that we're doing. So I'm going to search for marketing PR. And I get a few more surprises. One is I get this little announcement at the top, and clearly somebody's very excited that I found the press release. And so I'm getting some feedback right away. And I get another one of these result blocks, which is cool. But I also notice when I hover over it that the hover card looks a little bit different than the other Word document that I looked at. Right, so I have some unique properties specific to these press releases. I've got the ID number, and it's rendered a little bit different. And I'm starting to get this idea that items, even if they're the same type of item, two Word documents, can be handled differently and rendered differently and behave differently. And we're going to talk more about how to do that in a moment. The last thing that I want to show you, there's two more things. So I know that I'm going to be working on this marketing campaign. But I want to know who can help me with this. And so I'm going to do this search for marketing campaign, but I'm going to flip over to the People tab. And I can now see all my colleagues that have had some activities around marketing campaigns, and I can see why they came back in my search results with the hit highlighting and so forth. And again, there's some actions I can do. I can follow this person, and I could go and view their profile and see even more detail about them. So I'll just open another tab and peek. And so now I'm quickly seeing all of the details about this person, but I can also start to look at some of the ways that this person's interacting on the portal and the kind of conversations they're having and talking about in community sites and elsewhere. And that looks like the kind of person that I want help from, so I can even, if they were online, just start an IM session, supposedly, with this person, say, hey, I'm new, can I pick your brain, right? So I'm really finding a lot of context, and I'm finding people about what I'm trying to do. I can get in touch with them very quickly all through this kind of, you know, limited space of the search results page. So the very last thing for this demo is I had an experience where, we're a global company and some of our marketing folks are in Russia, and I got copied on an email chain that started in Russian, and then when the Americans added, they switched languages. And one person's signature that I really want to get back in touch with was in like Cyrillic or something. And so I just wanted to do a search to see if I could figure out who this person is. And if I search for them in the People tab here, I don't get any results, but I do notice I've got this preferences for results in English. And because we have a Russian contingency, I can switch so that my preferences is Russian, then I can find this person. So we recognize that there's some support for multilingual support for people profiles anyway. So that's just a really quick tour of the interface. And I think you'll agree that, one, it's a pretty rich experience, right? It kind of reminds me of some of the experiences I have on the internet and Bing and other search engines that I can't remember their name of right now. And two is that it's bubbling up layers of information, right? I'm finding people around concepts and the documents that they've created, and I can see who they've been talking to. And it's a lot of layers of information and context all in a very small area. And to me, it's very intuitive. So that's the quick tour. The next thing I want to talk about is what I consider to be the 2010 search experience backbone. And by that, I'm referring to four key tools that Microsoft has provided with this release that as a power user, I think you need to be really familiar with both how they work and how they work together as well, so you can start creating solutions for your customers or for your organization. So let's start with something called result sources. And these are one of two things. They're either a specific subset of the index, and so we used to call these scopes, but if you've got a search index and you've crawled file shares and documents and list items and custom databases and all these things, I don't always want to search against all of that. Sometimes I just want to search against people. So that's one use or one thing that a result source can be. The other is results from a remote search engine, and we call that concept federation. And you can federate search results from the internet, so bring Bing results into your portal, or it could be something like a remote SharePoint, like maybe an on-prem engine. Maybe your portal is in Office 365 and SharePoint Online, but you've still got SharePoint on-prem. You could federate those results back and forth. And the whole idea behind federation, or part of the idea, is that you're going to let that remote system do all the heavy lifting and then just ask for the results back. So if I want Bing search results, I'm not going to go crawl the internet and store all of that in my index. I'm just going to ask for the results back. And what I have up on the screen here, that screenshot is an interface that I created for a customer. And that's usually how you might apply result sources, is as these tabs here, and people want to search against these specific areas, right? So that's result sources. The next thing is result types. And they're all about identifying specific types of content based on a set of rules. So if you remember in the demo, we saw two Word documents, and they both kind of behaved a little bit differently and had different properties. So you can create these rules, and there are some obvious ones that you might do, and some are out of the box, like a Word document. That's a type of content. Maybe something specifically from your CRM, but you could also get much more involved and fancy. So documents that are authored by my CEO and were created within the last 30 days, maybe that's a type of content that I need to identify. But the question is, why do I need to identify them in the first place? Anybody? Why does it matter if I know which type of document is which? Yeah, that's a good answer. User identifiers. I mean, the main reason, as it relates to result types, is so that I can handle them differently, so that I can render them differently. So if I have two different types of content that have different types of metadata, and I want to surface those differently, and expose the metadata differently, have it behave differently, maybe have a workflow that, you know, surfaces for one and not the other, then I can use result types to identify those. And we're going to look a little bit closer at how we do this. You could do this kind of thing in 2010, but it was pretty darn tough, and it required kind of a developer resource. And here's an example of different result types, right? So the first item in this search results is a website that came back. And you can see that has very little metadata, but it's got this nice preview on the hover card. And then the next two items look completely different because those are discussion items. And so obviously want to handle them a little bit differently. And being able to identify the different types of items allow you to do that. So display templates work hand in hand with result types, right? And display templates are little discrete HTML files, and they're templates that determine how different file types, how different result types get rendered, both in the kind of search area and in the hover card. And I know this is a power user session, but there were a bunch of developers in here, so I'll just touch on it for a sec. These are HTML and JavaScript based. That's a big deal because the way that you did this in the past, the way that you would change how your search results look and behave, was to edit this huge, long XSLT file. Of the developers, who in here likes working with XSLT? No hands, no hands. It's really kind of funky, and it's tough to debug, at least in this context, and tough to work with it, as far as I'm concerned. And if I bring this screenshot back, I've just highlighted the different places where I'm using different display templates. So the web page result obviously gets the web page to save template. Likewise, with the discussion item, there's a separate display template for the hover card. And what you'll find is if you start working with 2013 a lot from the interface level is that display templates aren't just for search. You find them all over the place. So the way the system knew which display template to apply to which item was through what we talked about before, which is the result types, right? So you kind of see how those work together. The last one of the backbone that I want to talk about are query rules, and there are opportunity to inject some logic into the query and response, right? And we usually do that based on a user's intent. And sometimes people kind of scratch their heads when I say that. Sorry, I keep forgetting which button to press. Okay, it worked. So why would you want to change somebody's query or the results based on their intent? And wouldn't that be annoying to the user? I'll give you two examples of doing that. So this is Dell.com. Dell's one of our sponsors this week. So go by their booth and tell them I'm plugging them. So if I do a search for something like red on their website, it returns a bunch of search results, and I'm on the search results page. So no surprises there. But if I do a search for something else, like the word support, then something else happens, right? I was redirected to the support page. So whoever designed this website, this search experience, said, hey, if somebody searches for support, their intent, we think, is to get help, not to see a bunch of search results with the word support in them, so we're going to take action on it. They took a very good educated guess at my intent, took some action. That's exactly what query rules are in SharePoint 2013. I'll give you one other little example. If I search for this crazy string of numbers, I don't get anything back. But if I add one number, I get a very specialized kind of result. So it's actually not a real one, but it's the pattern of a United States Post Office tracking number for a package. And so, whoever designed this said, if somebody types in this exact pattern, then we think their intent is to track their package. We're going to give them an opportunity to do that. Guessed my intent and took an action on it. So in SharePoint, the way we do that is by knocking over your water. The way we do that in SharePoint is through query rules. And if we unpack it one level deeper, query rules are made up of three components. And I don't know if Thomas Molbach is in the room, but I stole these little images from him, so I need to give him credit. But query conditions, so the condition, say, in the Bing example was, did that string match the pattern of the tracking number? And then the query action, what are we going to do if it actually matches the pattern or meets whatever the conditions are? And then third is just publishing. So is it active, is it inactive, and is there maybe a date range we want to put around it for when this thing is going to fire? And then in terms of the actions, there are a handful that we can do. We can promote a result. In 2010, we called these best bets. And so if I fire a certain kind of query, I meet the condition, I take a single item or piece of content, stick it up at the top of the results. So maybe during open enrollment, if somebody does a search having to do with HR, we stick up the open enrollment site or something like that. We can show blocks of additional results. We saw a couple examples of that in the original, the first demo. I can change the ranking on the fly. So maybe if somebody does a search with the word report in it, I can take all the Excel files and put and increase, artificially, you know, boost the relevance of those and push those towards the top, something like that. Or I could completely rewrite the query. And I'm not saying you'll always want to do that, but you have the power to, just based on what they write, fire off some other query based on their intent. So that's what those are. And we're going to see examples of each of these, configuring each of these in this set of demos that I'm about to do. So these are the kind of six things that I think as power users that you guys can do to take advantage of this platform. And I already talked about visually distinguishing different types of content and that we can make different types of content look and behave differently. And we saw how discussion items look different than documents and those look different than videos and so forth. But we can get more creative than that. And I'll show you an example of how to do this. So in our organization at Contoso, we have a president called Ann Wallace, and she is kind of a working president. She actually creates a lot of documentation and works with customers and users a lot. And to our users, the things that she works on are extra important. And in this case, I don't want to artificially boost her content, though we could do that. But users have asked, can we just make it easier to identify the things that she's worked on? And so so that's what I'm tasked with. I want to make it really obvious when one of her things comes back, one of the items she's worked on came back as a result. So if I, and we're going to use two of the features that we just talked about. Anybody want to guess what the two features are going to be? Search? That's the right answer. Smart Alec. Display templates is one. Result types, exactly. So to do this, we go into site settings. And I'm going to go straight to result types. And then new result type. And I'll give it a name. I'll say, Ann's docs. I want it to apply to all of my sources, but I only want it to apply to Word documents in this case. And that's, so far that's my condition. And then I'll just add another condition here. And I can do this on any property that I have available. So where the author equals Ann Wallace. So that's my query condition. That was the first box. Or sorry, this isn't a query condition. Sorry, that's my conditions for determining what the result type is. And then the action that I want to take is just to give it a different look and feel. And we know we do that through display templates. Now, I'm not going to show you how I created this little custom display template. It's nothing. It's like one line of HTML. I made all these display templates that I'll show here available for download. So then as a power user, you can download and upload them into your environment. And then all you have to do is select them the way I'm going to here. And so I'm going to select this word item president, and that's my display template. And I'm going to cancel this because I actually already have it wired up for you so that it goes a little quicker. But we can see that this president docs that what the condition is, and we can see that the display template is associated with it. So if I do a search for something like sales and scroll down a little bit, Here's how I've visually identified that document. So not earth-shattering and pretty easy, but you get the idea that you can create some pretty complex rules about identifying types of content, not just based on the file type, but based on any attributes that you have available. And then you could take this kind of action on it. So that is thing number one. Thing number two is federation. And so we talked about what federation is already. What I have seen a lot of customers do is when they talk about federating is maybe in 2010 they would put like Bing results on their search page. And there's some value to that, I think. I think it adds a little bit extra context. But I think they really do that because it's very easy. And in fact, Microsoft during the 2010 release released a whole bunch of federated connectors that you could download from the Technic galleries. And you just download them, upload them into central administration, and then they're available for you to utilize within a federated search web part. And it's all pretty easy. But you can't use those in 2013. You have to go and configure them. So I thought what I'd do is show you guys how to make make one of these federators. And when I was thinking about what I might want to do, I'm a consultant and I talk to new customers all the time. And one of the things I like to do before I get on a call is, you know, maybe just get a really super quick and dirty feel for who they are, what they do, what's their location, what's their revenue, whatever. And I use Wikipedia for that. There's better tools, but I'm not a salesperson, so I don't need, you know, something better. I just need that. So I would actually like to have a Wikipedia connector federated into my portal. So Wikipedia was one of the federators that you could download from the Technic Gallery. So to start with, to figure out how to do that, I downloaded that and cracked it open in Notepad, and there's a big mess inside of it of like XML and XSLT and all that stuff. But what I saw at the top, which is what I was looking for, was the string to connect to Wikipedia. And I noticed two pretty funny things about it. One is that you probably already saw is it's not using Wikipedia. It's using Live Search, which is predecessor to Bing. And the next thing that I noticed is it's using an advanced feature of Live Search and now Bing, and it's scoping the search just to Wikipedia. So if you guys kind of get an idea, I'll just show you really quick. If you don't know what I'm talking about, if I do a search for SharePoint and then say site:wikipedia.org, then I just get only results about SharePoint from Wikipedia. If I switch this out to technet.com, then it changes just TechNet, nothing but SharePoint, and so forth. And at first I thought, hey, they're cheating. But then the more I thought about it, especially from the power user perspective, I think that's really clever and really easy to use, right? So if you learn how to just configure this one Bing federation source, then you can create a federator for almost anything just by swapping out that site name, right? And it's kind of a little quick, dirty trick, but I think it's super useful. And you just have to recognize that it's not truly federating from that other source. And I'd say 90% of the time that I've seen, it doesn't matter. But if you really need like their specific, you know, results algorithm or something like that, then you'll have to create a real federator. But anyway, I think this is a really cool, useful tool. So I'll just show you how to wire it up real quick in my environment. This is the string that you use, by the way. And so I'm going to go into my site settings, and I'm going to create a new result source. And I'll call it Wikipedia. And I'm going to choose Open Search. I'm not going to get into what Open Search means, but those are the things that you can connect to from a federation. You can, if it's important, you can look that up. But and then I'm just going to use this Bing search, right? Bing.com, and then you can see I used the site:Wikipedia, and that's it. And again, I wired this up beforehand for time's sake. But once you create it, then you can even just test it right from this interface, right? You can say, did I do this right? Test the source, and it should come back succeeded. But I also need to, it says it works, but I need to be able to see it. So to do that, just to test whether it's working, I'm going to use a query rule so we can kind of see how we wire our first query rule up. Local SharePoint results. And I would create a new rule called Wikipedia. And I would remove the conditions because I want it to always fire, right? So it's going to fire on any time somebody does a search. And then add a result block. I'd call this Wikipedia results. And then all I have to do is change this from the query's original source to wikipedia.org. And then in this case, you don't have to do this, but I created, I edited a default display template to have a, all it does is gives you a nice preview. And again, you can download this and use it, and it's optional. But that's all you have to do. I'm going to cancel this just because I already created it. And you can see that you can make them active or inactive. I'm going to make mine active. And then if I go back and do another search for SharePoint, let's try it again. There we go. Then you can see I get this little result block. So now I know it's working. And all that my display template does is make sure you get this nice preview, the way you do for your internal results. So that's that. Now, if we go back to our slides here. So again, it's kind of cheating, but I think it's a really cool tool to have in your back pocket to be able to federate all sorts of different things. The next thing I want to talk about is configuring search verticals. And we saw those were those tabs across the top. So one thing that, you know, I've noticed with this release is, and I talked about it a little bit, is that I feel like it borrows from the internet a lot in good ways. And it's important to recognize that even if maybe your search stinks internally and people aren't using it and they've given up on it, they're still searching all day, every day, right? Whether they're searching for the closest movie theater, whether they're doing Bing searches so they can help their six-year-old with their homework because they can't remember how to do division or whatever. They're searching all the time, and you have to realize that expectations are being set for them. And that when we're configuring search inside the firewall, that we want to look to those so that we can meet those expectations. One of those things is that we see this on most search pages now, this idea of search verticals. Now, Microsoft, you saw, created some very broadly applicable search verticals because they have to, because they don't know exactly what you do in your business. But our challenge is to find those that are applicable to our businesses, right? More specific. So back to this screenshot. These guys have these particular search verticals, and this is a law firm. So they have the broadly applicable verticals, and then they also have clients, matters, and expertise. So what I'll do is I'll just show you how to configure this, and this I'm just mostly showing this because I want you to see how easy it is. And if we build on this last demo here, I'm going to, the first step is to create a new page because your search vertical will usually land on a page. So I'm going to do file, new document, let's call this SPC wiki page. I'll create that. And then I'm going to check it in. If I don't do this, then I get an error later. Bear with me. So now I have my new page, and I just need to make a quick edit on it. So this is going to be the page that you get when you click on that particular vertical. And I'm going to go to my search results web part, and make note of the search result web part, because I'm going to talk about this in a minute. This is the web part where all of my search results are rendered. And so if I edit the web part, there's a button right at the top where I can change the query. And all I have to do is change it from local SharePoint results to my new federated source. And then in my case, I'm going to optionally use my new display template, Wikipedia page item, and that's it. And so now if I do a search here, I should, oops. Okay, so I'm just getting my federated source, and then the only other thing I need to do is add that link, and the way you do that is go to site settings, search settings, and then click add link, Wikipedia, then you choose your page, and then lastly, add a description. Now here's something pretty cool. You don't have to add these verticals by committee, right? We don't have to choose things that everybody can see. We can add it to just specific people. So I said I liked having that Wikipedia thing there, but maybe other people think that's silly. And so we could target particular users to get that experience based on their membership in an Active Directory group, based on their membership in a SharePoint group, or in a SharePoint audience. So that's something I would highly suggest doing just to create a more personal experience for your users, and something to think about a lot. And now if I go do a search, we'll see I have this new search vertical, right? So super easy to do. Any power user could do that. And so I would encourage you to start thinking about those things that are going to be applicable to your organization with regards to search verticals. The fourth one is surfacing business, meaningful business refiners. And the refiners, again, are those filters that we saw on the left-hand side. Some people call them facets. Those people are nerds. And we haven't talked about them that much yet. And I'm not going to go super deep here. I'm not going to do a demo on it. But it's something that I have to talk about with every search engagement. And we talked before about this idea that, you know, trends are being set from the internet, and you can try to meet those expectations. So most consumer sites and other sites have these refiners now on the left to help you find what you're looking for. Dell's getting another plug for me for some reason. And we have them in 2010 and 2013. And Microsoft, again, has, you know, out of the box configured some very broadly applicable refiners for you. And again, like the search verticals, your challenge is to figure out what's going to be applicable to my organization. And the way this usually works when I do it with the customers is we have something of a search summit, and we sit down and talk about how search is going to work and what we're going to provide. And we'll sit around and we'll start brainstorming about what would be a good refiner that's very specific to our business. And we'll think about things like listing off the different areas of the business. Are they creating discrete types of content that we could filter by, perhaps? Maybe you have specific types of content. So, you know, our legal team creates NDAs, and they create other types of contracts, and maybe they label them so we could filter by those. Customer names are sometimes important. So from a law firm or other professional services where you almost have a client attached to every type of content that you create. Some customers have like really unique vocabulary that they want to surface, like project code names and different things like that. Product categories, ingredients, materials, you get the idea. Depending on what your business is, there are a lot of cool things that you could surface that might be very useful. So that's part one of that conversation. Part two is the reality check. And the reality check is that you can only do this, you can only create a refiner for these if that content has been consistently tagged with that piece of information and is going to be going forward. So if you think about, what if I put a refiner on the page that says, you know, a non-disclosure agreement, and somebody clicked on that and refined down to that, and then they didn't find what they're looking for and generated a new contract, you can be sure they're going to come screaming at me next week when they realize that it already existed and they duplicated their effort. And even if it's their fault because they didn't tag it to begin with, I'm the search guy. Like, they're mad at me. So when you put that up there, there's sort of like a tacit promise, like, hey, this is going to work. So you really have to think about whether you're 100% sure when somebody clicks on it that the results that are going to come back are going to be accurate. That said, there are some metadata that always exists, right? So content type is a really good example. Every item in SharePoint, anyway, has a content type. And so it's another good reason for your organization to think about using content types really consistently and thoughtfully. So that's all I'll say about that for now. So aggregation has always been a good necessary use case in SharePoint, right? So we've got end users out there creating different types of items, announcements, and documents, and list items, and whatever, all over the place at different areas within your site. And it's very hard to get visibility into what all that is. And so we want to sometimes create views and aggregate that content up onto a web page. And the way that we used to do this in 2010 and before was to use something called the Content Query Web Part. Who in here is familiar with the Content Query Web Part? Almost everybody. And so that worked, for those of you who don't know, that worked pretty well. You drop a web part on the page, and then you configure it to like only roll up a particular content type and only maybe things that were modified in a particular date range, maybe scope it to a particular site, things like that. And then if you were brave, you would try to make it look a little bit different and configure it there. And that worked out pretty well, but there's a big limitation with the Content Query Web Part. What is it? That's exactly right. He said it only works within the context of your one site collection. So of all you guys who have SharePoint installed out there, how many of you guys have one site collection? If you do, you're doing it wrong. And so that's a pretty big limitation, right? If we've got a, just to kind of illustrate, if we have an architecture that looks like this, we've got a main site at the top, two site collections below that, and then God knows what nested underneath. And if I want to roll up items from that product list and I create the page at this level and use a content query web part, I can only get items at this from this list, right? Because content query web part can't see across that site collection boundary. So the way that we would solve that in the past was typically write a web part, get a developer to create a web part that maybe touches each site collection, grabs the items you want, smashes them together, and puts them in a view. And that works okay if you want to go that route. If you're me, what you would do is use search in the past. And the way I would do that is, do you remember I pointed out to take note of that search results web part? And that's the big fat web part on your results pages that lists all your search results. But that web part doesn't need to reside on a search page. You can put that anywhere you want. So what I would do is maybe put it on the home page of a department, and then maybe hard code a query in it, which you can do right in the website properties, and say something like content type equals Contoso products. And the cool thing is that then I would roll up items not only from this, but search has no problem seeing across site collections. And the deep thing is, I don't know if it's deep, but the cool thing is you can even aggregate outside of SharePoint, right? I can aggregate items from other farms, from custom databases, file shares. So search is a very powerful way to do that, right? But that wasn't really it wasn't really a power user task, right? Because as I mentioned before, making search results look different is kind of a tough task, and you use XSLT, and you really need a developer resource for that. And so what Microsoft has done, and this is a huge boon to all of us, is they created this content search web part, and as you can guess by the name, it works a lot like the content query web part, but it uses search. So you get all of this goodness of using search here for aggregating, but you can configure it very easily as a power user. And on top of that, they've created a bunch of out-of-the-box views. So you can get this very beautiful, kind of rich experience in terms of the look and feel of what you roll back without really knowing anything about web design. So I'm just going to show you how to configure one of these really quickly. Bear with me one sec. So if, in my case, I'm back at Contoso, and we've got a product site, and what it really does is it just holds this list that has all these products in them. Site contents. So Contoso products is my list, and you see it's just a list of my products, and it has an image, and it's got this little product ID, and if I go into the list properties, you'll see I've got a content type associated with it, right? Contoso product. And then I have a few site columns that I created, product description, product ID, and so forth. And so what I'd like to do is, if you notice that the homepage was a little bit lacking, it's not the most exciting page. So what I want to do is create a nice view and roll up all those items onto the page. And so as a power user, I can just edit this page and drop in my new fancy content search web part, insert web part. And we have this whole category for content rollup, content search. And I'll add it. And when it loads, you'll see I'll start to get results, and they'll look a little goofy at first. And then we'll edit this. And I just have to make a couple of tweaks to make this work. So I know I only want to get the items in my list, or perhaps any list that has that content type. And so we haven't talked about this yet. So this thing is called the Query Builder. And what it allows you to do is, as a power user, put together what can be complex queries without really knowing anything about how to work with the query syntax. So it's very cool. And in this case, we know that I have a particular content type, so there's this out-of-the-box thing that I can choose here. Items matching a content type, I can just choose that. I can scope this search to a particular app, but I don't want to do that. And I just want to choose my Contoso product content type. And I can see now in the preview that I've gotten back just items that match that query, right? So that's part one. Part two is I just have to decide what I want it to look like. So I want it to have 5 items. Instead of a list, I want a list that has a, you know, arrows to page back and forth. And then I can choose from a few different display templates based on what I want it to look like. I like this one. I'll keep that. And then I just have to tell the web part which of those columns I want it to take, where I want it to apply in the display template. So for the picture, I have a product image, right? And for the description, I have my own product description. And for the last one, I'll use, say, product ID. And those are those columns that I showed you before. I'll click this to go. And you'll see when this loads that it loads in this really, it'll render in this really nice way. And I didn't have to write one line of HTML, CSS, or anything. Apparently, you do have to wait for it, but it's worth it when it loads. But in my estimation, this is even things that you could give to a semi-power user, right? Like, let your maybe somebody that's not in IT start working with this, right? So it loaded, and it looks all cool. At least I think it does. And again, I didn't have to know anything about web design. If I had to create this on my own, it would probably take me 2 days. So anyway, that's how you do that. And I just did it from this one site, but you could do that from across your whole farm. Okay, the last thing is this idea of returning results based on the user's intent. We saw a couple of examples of that from the internet, right? We did the search on Dell.com for support, and it redirected us to the other page. And so I was kind of wanting to maybe perhaps create that kind of experience in SharePoint. And there's a lot of ways that we can use query rules and so forth, but I wanted to try that. And so if we go back to this, what I heard from my users and what I can see in some of my query reports and things like that is that users are doing a lot of searches just for the product ID. And what they're really trying to get to is that list item, right? They want to get here. And so I was asked, is there a way that we can get there easier rather than having to go search for it and then click on it? And so I wanted to try to create that experience like they did with Dell.com, where they typed support and they got redirected. And so if they do a search for this product ID, I've been asked to make it so they get forwarded right here. I'm not saying that's the most usable thing to do to your users, but I do want to show you how you can accomplish these kinds of things. So the way we're going to do that is by creating a new query rule. Now, this one is kind of cool. There's a number of ways to do that, right? We saw with the Bing example with the tracking number that it could match a pattern. We can do that in SharePoint. So if you have a naming convention for your product ID, you could use, say, like a regex statement for the developers in the house to match that. I could also just have a hard-coded list of phrases, you know, separated by a semicolon. And if it matches any of those items, then I could fire my query rule. Or, in this case, because I used a a managed metadata field to store all of my product IDs, there's a term set associated with it. And so if I say product ID redirect, one of the things that I can do here is choose the query contains an entry in the dictionary, in a particular dictionary, and that's really just a term set. So I can import my term set here. Right, so here's all of my Contoso product IDs. Right? And so I can just import that term set into my query rule, and now whenever somebody searches just for that, it's going to fire my query rule. So that's half the battle. I've identified when somebody did that search. The second thing I need to do is figure out how to redirect them there. And I did something kind of cheat a little bit, and what I do is I create a result block that just returns one item, and then in my display template, I have one line of code that I added in there that just redirects them. It's like a Windows.redirect or whatever you call that. That redirects them to the path of that particular item. And again, I made that available for download if you guys want to play with that. So all I have to do is create my result block. I choose that I want one item to come back. I'm going to change the query so that that if the product ID equals what the user entered, so then you see how I can do that, and I don't have to know this syntax. So it's only going to should only return one item, assuming that that's a unique field in that list. And then lastly, I just choose my display template, which was Contoso product item redirect. And like the others, I wired it up ahead of time so you didn't have to wait for it to become active. But I'll show you. If I go back to my search page and do a search for that product ID, it should briefly show the search results page, but then take us right to the item. So that's kind of exactly what we saw, right? I'm not suggesting, by the way, that you do this a lot, right? That might be jarring for the users, and you want to give them a way to maybe choose and go back. But it shows you the kind of power of the types of things that you can do and how you might choose to apply those concepts that you see on the internet about taking actions based on somebody's intent in SharePoint. So, the next thing I want to talk about are some tips and best practices, things I've learned doing search engagements over time. The first one, we already talked about a little bit with the refiners. You've got to get your governance going. And I'm not going to dwell on it because it's a little beyond the scope of this conversation, but it's certainly related, as you can tell. And the idea is that if your content is not tagged well, if you've got duplicate documents all over the place, if you've got crazy site sprawl, if you have outdated, irrelevant content, and if you don't use content types and so forth, that your search results are going to be crummy. And that doesn't mean that you don't do search. It means that, one, you set your expectations, that you're going to get back what you have out there, and that, number two, you get to work on the governance side. And so that's doing things like setting up a governance committee, training people to tag their documents, training them to edit in place instead of making multiple versions by creating version after version out of place, assigning content owners and good content stewards, and perhaps thinking about things like auto-tagging solutions so users don't have to think about it. All that stuff, that could be a multi-year endeavor, and it's something that you'll always be working on if you have an ECM system, and it's just part of doing business. So again, I don't want to dwell on it too much, but if, I have a lot of thoughts on it. If you want to talk to me afterwards, feel free to find me. The other thing is, I did say you don't have to be a search expert to make some pretty powerful solutions in search anymore, but as power users, this is well within your capabilities to become an expert in the query language. And I'd venture to bet that there are a ton of powerful kind of advanced search capabilities that you can take advantage of right inside the search box, and 99% of people aren't even aware of them. You can do these proximity searches. I've got two words, and I want to only get a match depending on how close they are to each other, right? All sorts of things like that. And so we won't talk too much about it now, but if you download the deck, you can click on that link, and you'll learn more about it. So I would encourage you to do that. The other thing along the same lines is our query variables. Microsoft made available tons and tons of query variables that you can use within the context of that query builder. So I'm just showing a couple of these. You can get the current user's name, so you could change the query so that it only returns documents that they authored or something like that, or their email, and you can get that all dynamically based on the current user. You can get today's date plus or minus days, different things like that. There's a lot of them out there, but I would just get familiar with them so that you know as business requirements come up, you'll have these to draw from. If you are one of the folks that are brave enough to start working with display templates, if you're a super power user, just a couple of things to note about them. There's just sort of kind of, I guess I'd call it pseudocode in there. I kind of call it that because there's only a tiny bit of it, and it's a syntax that I've not seen before. So you'll need to get familiar with that, and there's some really good articles about that with great examples on MSDN. For every display template, which as I mentioned is a little HTML file that you find in your master pages gallery, there is a corresponding JavaScript file, and it gets created automatically. You shouldn't touch it, don't delete it, don't add a new one, just don't mess with it. Just be aware that it's there so you're not surprised when you see it. If you uploaded a brand new one, a brand new display template, the list would actually automatically generate a new JavaScript file for you, so you never have to think about it. You can edit display templates in whichever tool you choose, whichever editor you choose, so you're not stuck with, I shouldn't say it that way, you're not limited to SharePoint Designer. I use Notepad++ a lot for things like that. And when you're doing that, you can either choose to maybe download a display template, edit it and change the name and all that stuff, and then re-upload it and publish it, or you could just map a drive to that folder, and then you, as you make your changes, you hit save and then refresh your browser and you can kind of see what's happening, which is pretty cool. Some people complain that they'll lose connection to it and that it becomes kind of a drag, so they download it. And these two guys, Matthew McDermott and Corey Roth, both have talks specifically about this stuff, display templates, tomorrow. So I would check those out if you want more information about that. The last thing is that it does require that the publishing feature is on to work with these display templates. And if you're working within the context of a search center, it'll already be on. But if for some reason you go and look for it and they're not there, that's probably why. So the last thing I wanted to talk about is troubleshooting. So when you're working with these solutions and creating search solutions as a power user, just because you're a power user doesn't mean you don't have access to some troubleshooting tools. And the first one is this diagnostic display template, which Microsoft provides right out of the box. So if you remember, we created this beautiful list of products. If, let's say, maybe the images aren't showing up properly or something else, I can open the website properties just like this, switch the display template to this diagnostic one, and again, it's there right out of the box. And it, you see on the left, it changes it how it gets rendered, and I can see what are the actual values that are coming back from the search index, and what are they mapped to, and which managed properties am I using? And you can very quickly diagnose what's going on, so you have that little tool. Unfortunately, this is only available for the content search web part and not for your search pages. And so one of the gentlemen that I said was talking about display templates tomorrow, Matthew McDermott, gave me a little snippet of code, and I created my own display template for it. And it creates this, which is the list of every single managed property that came back from the search engine for that result and the value that comes back with it. And so this is one thing you should, I highly recommend. So for every search implementation I've ever done, I create a second search results page, and I call it admin, or in this case, I called it rawproperties.aspx. And then I lock it down so only the admins can see it. And then if something goes wrong or somebody says, why is this result showing up? It shouldn't be showing up. Then you can just flip open that page that only you have access to and look at what the details are behind the scenes and be troubleshooting in no time, right? So really super useful. I would recommend you guys do that. If you download this deck, I just listed out all of the search sessions and then highlighted those that are either for power users or that are specifically applicable to something we talked about in here. And that's it, guys. So the display templates are available if you want to download those. And don't be shy. Please email me. Ask me questions. Come up and talk to me. If you guys have questions now, we can do Q&A a little bit. I'll also be at the AppPoint booth for the rest of the week if you want to come down and chat. Happy to do it. And then I also run a weekly webinar called SharePoint Shop Talk, and you can come on there and ask questions of myself and other esteemed guests in the audience. So thank you, guys. I'm honored that you spend this time with me. Thanks. Did you have a question?
Yeah, I have a question. So we have like normal search and then the federated search. So is there a way to blend both the results or merge both the results?
That's a great question. So the question was, if we have federated search and regular search, can we kind of combine the results so that we get a unified set of results?
Right.
The answer is out of the box, no. And we hope that that's coming in the future. There are some third-party tools that can help you kind of blend those together, and they use an algorithm that kind of feathers them together.
Okay.
And in some cases, that may be a good option, but out of the box, no, they're separate.
Okay, one more question.
Yeah.
So the content search web parts, right? I know like these are plug and play, like you plug in it anywhere and you can get the powerful search there. But let's say on a portal, like on the homepage, if I have, let's say 10 or 15 content search web part, are they gonna have like a massive impact on search query performance?
Such a good question. So the question is, if we're using the content search web part as an aggregator, and perhaps you have multiple, the way you might have multiple list web parts on a page, are you gonna have a performance impact, particularly on your query component? And the answer is maybe, yeah. I mean, especially if it's on your homepage and the first thing, you know, 5,000 people do is open their browsers in the morning and they all point to the homepage, then you can, but I think you just need to be aware of it so that you can do the right kind of load testing to make sure that your query servers are scaled up or out enough to handle the load. But it is a consideration.
Okay, thank you.
The distributed cache or the group cache? Oh, on Office 365, that's a good point. Yeah, I'm not as familiar with it. Thank you. Well, so if they're the out of the box, so the question is, if you have a custom newsletter control, and you want the data set to be the search results, I mean, you would be doing it programmatically, and you could create your slider to be a connected web part, right? So there's an API to do that, and then you could grab the web part, grab the results through the connection. Yes, it can. Yep. Oh, the question is, what is the snippet of code that I use to create the diagnostic display template? If you go to that paulolenik.coplex.com, one of the display templates in that zip file is that. Yep. Sure.
So if I use the open search setting and if I federate it, yep, is there any way to get back enough data to render refiners on my SharePoint page without having to go through the core properties, manage properties route?
That's a good question. That he's saying if you create a federated source using OpenSearch, is there a way to get to populate refiners based on that? It's kind of two answers. Part of it is no, not out of the box. The second is that the provider would have to be, you'd have to have a call to provide those, right? So like in SharePoint, there are two things that come back, your regular search, and then you get your refiners as well, right? And it's a separate kind of data source. But I believe that BA Insight has something that creates dynamic refiners, so kind of on the fly based on the content that came back.
Sure.
I believe that's true.
Sure, and the other question is, does that work only for anonymous searches? What if I'm making an enterprise search wherein there is a concept of authentication both on the search page and also on the other side, from where I'm federating it from, and where I only have to present privileged results.
Right. So when you configure the question is, can you only federate from sources that don't have security applied to them, anonymous? And no, there's a bunch of options. As you create a result source, there's a radio button at the bottom where you can choose to apply security in a number of ways, whether you want to impersonate or whether you want to pass the user's credentials on. So there's just an option there at the bottom of your result sources.
Okay. Yep. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So I have a question here. So can I like apply custom SSLT to my search content search web part?
No, because it's not created using SSLT anymore, right? So for each
result, it is not XML-based?
What's that?
So the search is not XML based?
There's some XML that comes back, but it's automatically rendered to go and reach out to the display template based on the result type for each item, and it's just pulling the HTML and rendering it there. I suppose if you wanted to create a custom web part because you like XSLT so much that you want to use it, then you could try to get it back and format it that way.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Any other questions?
I kind of forgot the question,
actually. Hey, Paul, thanks for sharing today. This was good.
Sure.
Question regarding scope of all this, the site level, site collection, and so forth. I mean, if these power users are doing this, I assume it's at the site collection or site level that they've... So
yeah.
Can you talk about the gotchas with the scope?
Yeah, that's such a good question. So the question is basically at what scope do you apply these settings, and would a power user necessarily have the capability to do that? And I totally basically glossed over that subject just on purpose for time reasons. But for most of these things that we talked about, query rules and result sources and federated sources, you can configure them at multiple scopes. So you can configure them and apply them at the central administration level down to the site level. So depending on the context, the power user may be configuring that at that site level, but there may be others that are being pushed down from central administration.
All right, thanks.
Yep.
I have one last question.
Sure.
So in content search web part, let's say like I want to display content from a particular site collection, like whatever content I have in that site collection, I want to display that. So for each site collection, like there are site level site permissions, like different permission group, owner, contributor, member. Is there a way to get those permissions? Is there a way to use those permissions while filtering the search on that content search web part? Are those permissions comes as a crawl property somewhere or?
Oh, you mean you want to pull back the ACLs from the search item?
Yeah, so let's say like in my content search web part, a different set of content I only want to show for, contributor, right, to that particular site collection. So that like when...
Oh, I see. So instead of using the automatic site trimming that you get,
right.
or say... Item level permissioning and trimming that you get, you want to, on top of that or instead of that,
yeah, on top of that,
do it based on SharePoint groups, not based on what they actually have permission to.
Right.
I suppose there might be a way to do that, but it would be custom.
Okay.
Right? So if you really want to like get around using the automatic trimming, you may have to do something like, I'm not saying this is the best way, what I can think of off the top of my head is maybe do your search using impersonation based on the crawl account that has access to everything. You get your results back, and then based on the current user, look at each of those groups and kind of do your own trimming and then display the results. I don't know
okay.
if that's the best way, but it's
one way I can
think of.
Thank you.
Yep.
I have a question for you.
Sure.
During your demonstration, you set up a result type for the CEO based on Ann Wallace.
Right.
That looked like that was free text. What if you've got two Ann Wallaces?
Because
you might be given the wrong level of result for the person.
Oh, that's a good question. If you have two Ann Wallaces, then it would apply to both of them.
It looked like it's free text. You need to do it on a user's ID
or
something.
So, yeah, exactly. So there's a flaw in that particular solution. Yeah.
But we could do it another way? Or?
Yeah, I'm sure you could. I'd have to think about it for a minute. Maybe I'll think about that and try to follow up with a blog.
Thank you for your time.
Yeah, sure. Good point, though.
In your demonstration, you used a Search Center.
Uh-huh.
So how much of this is scoped if you don't activate Search Center?
Almost everything we did here, perhaps everything I did here, is available. But you may have to activate a feature or two to get them to apply if it's in a basic team site or something like that.
But you don't need a Search Center specifically?
No. Okay. Nope.
I have a question on wildcard search. Is there a possibility to have the wildcard at the beginning of the search string?
I think that, so in KQL, which is the default language, you don't get that.
Yeah.
There's another language that's available to us, but not really for end users, but programmatically you could use it called FQL. And to use that, you would create your custom web part, and you just, there's a way to do it. You can see it on TechNet where you basically have that use a different syntax. And for that, you do have wildcards at the beginning.
Okay.
Yep.
Thanks.
Sure.
Hi.
Hey.
How easy or difficult is it to configure SharePoint to search file shares, and does it respect permissions and ACLs as well?
Yep. So it's very easy to crawl file shares, mm-hmm. and it does respect. Assuming that it's using Windows NTLM
mm-hmm.
or. permissions, and so it's very easy to do. Mm-hmm. But there's a big, people actually don't do it that often, and that's usually because people's file shares are not very well managed, because it's very difficult to set the permissions appropriately. So it tends to end up being a security risk. If you search some giant file share, perhaps nobody ever saw it before because they didn't know they had access to something.
Got it.
But and I call that like security through obscurity.
Yeah.
But then once you crawl it, all this stuff starts getting surfaced in your search engine. So I'd say it's very easy to configure. If you're going to do it, create a separate source for it, and that's only, that only admins can see at first, and really kind of take a close look at whether it's surfacing anything dangerous or whatever.
Makes sense.
Yep. Yeah,
thank you. Second part of my question is, so let's say you enable a hybrid environment search.
Yep.
Right. So you have a search center, an on-prem search center, and then you have one in the cloud as well.
Yep.
Will, I guess I'm thinking this aloud. So
how do you search from one to the other and so forth?
Yeah.
There's actually a bunch of good sessions on that at the conference. It's called Hybrid Search.
Right, right.
It requires jumping through some hoops and some infrastructure and setting up a reverse proxy and stuff.
Yeah.
But it can be done, and you can kind of get side-by-side, not integrated, but side-by-side search.
Right, but then are there any caveats with respect to file you know, if you have to search file shares?
Nope. Yeah, you can get your file share results back as a federated result.
Because, oh, okay.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Guys, we'll make that the last official question, but I'll hang out and we can chat. Thank you.